Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, you would have thought from the perspective of Democrats and many in the mainstream media that once Bernie Sanders absolved Hillary Clinton of any more discussion of her emails, that the issue was moot. Not so. Fox News, Catherine Herridge, reporting that 3 months after Hillary Clinton's use of a private email address and server while Secretary of State was referred to the FBI, an intelligence source familiar with the investigation tells Fox News that the team is now focused on whether there were violations of an Espionage Act subsection pertaining to, quote-unquote, gross negligence in the safekeeping of national defense information. Under the law, the information does not have to be classified to count as a violation. The intelligence source, citing the sensitivity of the ongoing probe, said the subsection requires the lawful possession of national defense information by a security clearance holder who, through gross negligence, such as the use of an unsecure computer network, permits the material to be removed or abstracted from its proper secure location. If your eyes haven't glazed over after the technical definition of the law, the point here is that both Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and even President Obama are wrong, that there's nothing to look at here in terms of compromised national security.
Yeah, and if you kind of thought that, from early on, Hillary's explanation was she had no idea that it was unsecure, that she was assured that it was secure. Look out for that bus, staffers. And constantly this sense, like, she didn't knowingly forward any classified information. She doesn't remember ever getting anything that was labeled classified, yada, yada, yada. People who handle classified information for a living keep saying, well, wait a minute, that's totally not an excuse. The fact that there is this gross negligence provision in there does seem like something a much lower bar to demonstrate, because you don't need to demonstrate motive. And Hillary's whole thing is, well, you can't prove that I meant to spread out classified information, thus I'm off the hook. And it doesn't appear that's the case. The second aspect that was interesting in this, it was in the New York Times earlier today, is that it kind of indicates that the FBI is really irritated that President Obama had made that statement indicating that, well, he doesn't think any real national security damage was done here, when that's precisely what they're investigating at this point. If that's the case, we'll know what the FBI is doing when they announce what they're doing. But it does seem interesting that if he appears to be pressuring them to conclude that no harm, no foul, the easiest way to demonstrate that you are not taking the president's orders is to not do what the president wants you to do, isn't it, Greg?
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of reverse psychology. Like, if he really wanted to get her off the hook, what he could have said was, actually, I'm very serious about it. And I would demand the FBI do something about it. Because then the FBI could say, no, the evidence isn't there. And that way they're defying the president. They're not being ordered to do this politically. We will eventually see what the FBI does with this. But this information does indicate that the FBI is taking it seriously and that the legal standard of proving wrongdoing in a crime here isn't so unimaginably impossible to reach.
One of the things that's been slightly refreshing in the last couple of weeks in an otherwise miserable administration is the fact that people are going, not necessarily on the record because they want to keep their jobs, but they're willing to talk with the media, whether it's these folks at the FBI or folks at the State Department a couple of weeks back who were tired of taking the rap for Hillary Clinton's actions with regard to her server and her private email. And they're making it clear in public, even if they're not using their names, that they do not agree with this, and there is some honor going on here in this administration, even if it's at a much lower level.
Yeah, the president, who he won't comment on ongoing investigation when it's convenient.
Right.
But the moment he feels, I'll talk about that. Sure. the flip, that seems like a good transition to our next martini, doesn't it?
Yes, Greg? It most certainly does. Some folks can remember, Jim, all the way back to yesterday when we gave the president credit for changing his plan on withdrawing virtually all U.S. troops from Afghanistan, essentially by the time he leaves office, looking at the ongoing resurgent Taliban, the fall of Kunduz, the need for greater counterterrorism efforts, the fact that the Afghans still can't secure themselves and that sort of thing, while he's going to leave 5,500 troops in Afghanistan. So we're like, well, he's recognizing reality. Well done, Mr. President. Well, now we know a little bit more in a very disturbing way from former Defense Secretary Bob Gates, who sat down with Brett Baer of the Fox News Channel. And there's a couple different things here that really ought to chill folks when it comes to the way that Obama and his administration have handled the military. First of all, Brett Baer brought up the major political micromanagement of the military. And here's a couple of clips on that.
It was the operational micromanagement that drove me nuts, of White House and NSC staffers calling senior commanders out in the field and asking them questions, of second-guessing commanders. That's the kind of thing that made me crazy.
And Gates says that would absolutely not have happened when he was Deputy National Security Advisor in the Bush 41 administration.
If I had tried to call a field commander going around Dick Cheney, who was Secretary of Defense, or Colin Powell, who was Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, I'd have had my head handed to me, probably personally, by the president.
But this is the biggest whopper. Bear asked him about people being politically paranoid inside the Obama administration. What Gates says here ought to really worry people.
What led you to say this about President Obama and the military? President Obama was, quote, deeply suspicious of their actions and their recommendations.
I think this was particularly true in Afghanistan. And I think there were people in the White House, and I don't want to name any names, who were constantly goading him and saying, the military's trying to box you in. The military's trying to trap you. The military's trying to bully you. The military's trying to make you do something you don't want to do.
I'll name names. Was Vice President Biden one of those people?
I think so. And I was told so. And I think, but he was not alone.
So, Jim, we got some of the LBJ micromanagement going on here. We know how that turned out, and it seems to be turning out kind of the same way in Afghanistan. And then you've got political people, Biden included, basically telling him to stiff-arm the military recommendation.
Yeah. Now, on the one hand, you'd like to give credit to Brett Baer for being a really good guesser. On the other hand, knowing what we know about Robert Gates and his opinion of Joe Biden, you could probably say, Secretary Gates, do you think Joe Biden was the second shooter on the grassy knoll of the JFK assassination? And Gates would probably say, well, there's a good chance of that. You know, he also may have taken Lindbergh, baby. No, we should not discount the assessment of Robert Gates. I think, look, it's not surprising that the community organizer from the streets of Chicago president doesn't have a spectacular relationship with his military leaders. It didn't have to be this way, but I think it's really interesting that the president, apparently from early on, was really on guard about being bullied by the military or being manipulated by the military, or the military kind of painting him into a corner in his decision making. If only he'd taken the same approach to, say, the Iranians, Greg. Well, God, for those American generals, they're sneaky, but the Iranians, they're fine. You can trust them. So it's a very strange mentality in this White House. We shouldn't be surprised by this. Yesterday's good martini out of novelty was giving Obama credit for the keeping some troops in Afghanistan. It sounds like most people in the military world are saying, look, this is basically two guys. This is really not going to be a significant enough force to make a difference here. We'll see how this shakes out, but it certainly does seem like for the entirety of Obama's presidency, there's been tension there. And as the end of the Obama era – I'm sorry, the Obama era – I just can't say era. It comes across as error. It's almost like a Freudian slip or a not-so-Freudian slip there. That basically it's becoming increasingly clear that the relationship with the military is getting worse. You can only imagine what things are going to look like in summer or fall of 2016, huh, Greg?
Oh, my goodness. And we'll get to that in just a second, and it's going to lead into this. But two takeaways here. First of all, what we're hearing is the 5,500 recommendation that the president went with was not the military recommendation. It's half that. He wanted zero. They wanted double. So he decided to split it in half and go with 5,500. And secondly, wasn't Joe Biden brought on the ticket because of his foreign policy, national security expertise, and he's the guy telling Obama not to trust the military?
Yes. Yes. In fact, I remember the night Biden was selected. I was down in South Carolina. This was 2008, and the talking head on CNN, some young woman, was saying that Joe Biden was a foreign policy genius. One of the greatest minds in foreign policy. And I believe at that point somewhere Robert Gates is clutching his heart and leaning over with great stress. So there is that aspect there which kind of jumps out at this. And one more point just to think about that original decision on Afghanistan early on in 2009. Stanley McChrystal sends Obama a report saying we have 1 year to save Afghanistan. And I believe Obama took like 5 months to consider it. Chop, chop. You know, time is of the essence, but no, I'm going to take my time. I'm going to think about it. So look how far we've come, Greg, how much better we are 7 years later.
Absolutely. So there's no better reason than to make Joe Biden the next president of the United States. And Jim, the D.C. political chattering class is just absolutely beside themselves because there's an email out from Biden's longtime aide Ted Kaufman saying a decision is likely to come in the next 3 days. So the guy who has basically been a political laughingstock is perhaps the hope of many in the Democratic Party. It's interesting, though, that in the wake of the debate, the mainstream media, which has been asking, is Biden going to run every 15 minutes, now that Hillary Clinton didn't drool or stumble on her way out to the podium, basically has decided there's no reason for him to get in this race.
It's hard not to begrudge Joe Biden feeling a little whiplash after the, you know, press corps was, you know, pretty much begging him to get in, talking about what a great candidate he is, the opportunities there. 72 hours later, boy, Hillary was amazing. Oh, what, you know, he may feel a need for a neck brace, kind of like the one that Robert Gates was wearing for a while. The other thing which is kind of odd about the Biden decision, I just put up a post in the corner about this. When Biden stepped down from his Senate seat, Ted Kaufman was a longtime staffer who was appointed to the post and you know, was a senator for about 10 minutes. But he's a longtime close Biden ally. And he sends an email to a whole bunch of Biden supporters saying, look, he's still thinking about it. He's still working about it. Keep your powder dry. The closing line struck me as odd. He says, you know, let's stay in touch. If he decides to run, we will need each and every one of you yesterday, Ted. Well, Greg, if you need the help yesterday, maybe you should have made the decision the day before yesterday. Right? But it's kind of an acknowledgement. Look, it's getting kind of late in the process. As Yogi Berra said, it gets late early out there. You know, that this is the cycle. Look, we're already in mid-October. I had to go look it up. The first filing deadline for the 2016 cycle is November 6th in Alabama. So that's about 3 weeks away. Now, look, if you're not on the Alabama ballot, it's not necessarily the end of the world, but they start coming in pretty quickly after that. November 9th, Arkansas, 10th, the Texas. States start having their filing deadlines to appear on the primary ballot in November and into December. So he doesn't really have a ton of time anymore. And then for a lot of these states, you got to go out, you got to collect signatures and things like that. It wouldn't be an impossible task, but you can't do this the day before and say, you know, presto changeo, here are my list of signatures and things like that. So getting a little late for Biden. I think it's time to, you know, whatever you're going to do, do it. And I stand by my observation that if you really wanted to run, you have the sneaking feeling that he'd be, you know, running.
Oh, so to channel my inner John McLaughlin, prediction, 72 hours from now, is Joe Biden a presidential candidate?
I don't think he's going to run. I think he would have, if he wanted to do it, he would have done it by now.
Yeah, I think you're right. My prediction is that he will not run. We'll see if we're right. Jim, on that note, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks very much for being with us today. Have a great weekend, everyone, and join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.